This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, listen, I met Michael Otten a little while ago. He's the CEO of One Plan Insurance. He's only 34 years old, and he started this company in March 2010. First of all, that is, I mean, to be 34 and CEO of a massive insurance company like this, and I know you guys are still planning to get even bigger, and there's all kinds of other stuff going on. I'm just blown away by how well you've done, and you're 34, and I've done nothing. And Mabali, don't you feel like a failure?
Always. Always. Every day of my life.
So thanks very much, Michael. Let's start on that note.
Absolutely. Well, thank
Making
you.
Making us feel horrible.
I prefer not to, but I think it's a bit of an overstatement. You've done nothing. I'll say just 34, just to wrap it in a little bit.
But there's lots to still do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Plenty to still do. I think at the age the business is currently, we're still really in the infancy of what we're trying to achieve.
The insurance business in South Africa is so competitive.
Massively
so. Competitive. When you decided this is what you wanted to do, it was probably a little less. I mean, there were certain opportunities that you must have seen.
Yeah.
But you could have done anything. Insurance is so hard to get into. Why did you decide to do that?
I think maybe a little bit of ignorance, Gareth, to be honest. I don't think we knew at the time. Sometimes it is bliss to not really know how difficult something is.
And then how soon after that did you realize, oh, wow, this is going to be tough?
I think it took a couple of years, but I think we still realize how tough it actually is. It's a continually evolving market. There's new players in the market all the time. Some particularly large players in the market who often make it quite difficult to sort of coexist.
Like gorillas in the room and you're trying to kind of
fight
for scraps.
You're eking out your sort of safe spots. There are ways and means to find your own place in the market. And I think that's what we try and do all the time, is how do we differentiate ourselves enough so that we can stand sort of head and shoulders above some of the larger competitors.
So are you one of those people who did really well at school? Were you a CA and then did you also do actuarial science? How did it work? How did you get into this?
Not so much. I did okay at school. I think I was sort of bribed and dragged along to actually finish it, despite many sort of arguments towards the end and demands that I was leaving, and that was it. And I wasn't really given many options.
Were you a bit of a rebel?
Not necessarily. I kind of just wanted to sit in the middle ground where I wasn't doing too well. I was kind of getting by, but it wasn't drawing too much attention to myself.
Now, I was sort of like that at school, and people said to me that means I was lazy. I thought, you know what? What's the upshot of getting 95% for maths and science and English? And
yeah.
Because so what, right? And I don't want to go to varsity and become a doctor or a...
Yeah, it was never really on my agenda. Like, there was no profession that was there. So, I got through school, did all right, went to university, didn't really know why I was going to university. So I studied a very sort of broad degree.
Me
business
too.
Sort of
I did
degree.
Law. I hated it.
And I did it because I was.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of fun doing it. Missed a lot of lectures early on a Friday morning. And we had a 6:30 accounting lecture on a Friday morning.
Now, that's disgusting that they do that. But people will say, you know, these people who really have done well, and by no means am I saying you have accomplished everything you wanted to accomplish, but you're on your way there. And you started this company, and that's a hard thing to do in this country, in this economy, with the market that we've got, but in the insurance industry particularly. But a lot of people will say, well, you know, the great CEOs, the founders, the people who do the things that you've already done, you can pick them up from early. You're saying that you had a pretty unremarkable start at school at the beginning of varsity. So when did it all change?
I'm not really sure. I think there was always a burning sort of question of what did I actually want to do? So because I didn't know, I did this general degree. I started my honors year.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I'd achieved enough so my parents would actually let me stop studying. So halfway through honors, I said, look, absolutely, this is enough now. I'm really not learning anything. So I canned honors halfway through.
Uh-huh.
And then I had no idea what to do. So my father at the time, he was in property development, so sort of a natural progression. I started doing something there. However, he did tell me that he would not let me work for him unless I could add some value, which is why only after a degree did I do that. And it was pretty scary. I mean, the first day I went to work, I didn't know how to send a fax.
There were faxes.
There were faxes.
For start, yeah.
There were faxes. That's 34. Right. There were faxes.
What's that?
It's a very old machine. Amazing.
See, it makes a funny noise, and
you never know which way to put the paper in.
Oh, yeah, and paper came in rolls. It was really just a horrible thing.
Shocking. So we did that for a while, but during that time, I learned a lot of stuff in terms of how to deal with people and what people require. And it's a broad spectrum of people that you deal with in sort of construction and home development, etc. So you deal with your high net worth people who are buying expensive houses. But at the same time, you deal with people who are really laying bricks. So it's a full spectrum. And I think I gained a lot of insight into our country as a whole during that
kind of what the socioeconomic makeup of South Africa is.
Because you're a bit wet behind the ears when you join the workforce. You don't know really what's going on. You haven't really seen it. And I think to a large extent, I had quite a sheltered childhood, you know.
And I suppose also when you deal with people and their houses and their properties, you're dealing with likely their biggest asset that they will purchase in their lives. Yep. You're dealing with their prioritization of what money they have and how much they're willing to put away for X, Y, and Z.
Absolutely.
So it gives you an idea of how much people have.
Yeah. And it's generally a large portion of what they have that they're spending. Mm. It's also very personal. I mean, you're in their homes. It's that kind of thing. So that was a good basis for sort of understanding where the gaps were.
And were you looking for these things or were you just learning on the job?
Well, I mean, not necessarily looking. And I think, you know, often when things go wrong is when opportunities and when you take advantage of opportunities. I mean, I think if we look at sort of 2008, that sort of period, we were coming off a major property boom.
Yeah.
So it was booming. Everyone was smiling. It was great. We came off this boom and I was kind of sitting there going, well, I'm being paid for doing very little because everything slowed down. You were 3, 4, 5 years away from things actually building up again. So so then my brother and myself actually started talking about hold on, how do we start catering for the needs of people who have less within the insurance market? Because it's what we have in the country. We have a sort of higher net worth person who are in the formal sort of economy, formal financial institutions, well insured.
They usually have a broker,
absolutely. You know, full medical aid scheme type of cover.
Right.
The biggest issue is our government institutions can't fill the gap. Mm-hmm. So our public health isn't great. Our public school system isn't great.
Right.
For example, so we've got this great sort of private. Sort of country and economy that operates fantastically well. It's the best in the world, but what about the gap? And that's really where our minds started operating. There is a gap of people who are aspirational, who want to be there. There's also a gap of people who have been there, but can no longer for whatever reason. I mean, you mentioned our economy, etc.
They say that when the economy goes down, people cancel their insurance.
Yeah, it's one of the first things.
Is that what happens?
Absolutely. We see it.
Because they can't afford it, and that's got to be the thing. And
that's the thing
how dangerous is that? Because if things go wrong, then you're hit with a double whammy.
Absolutely.
You not only lose something and you don't have the insurance to get it back, but you also don't have the money that you've spent, that you would have spent on insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. We've just seen it now. I mean, we've come off the December festive seasons, and our return rate on debit orders does go up substantially.
Oh, really?
Despite our best efforts, and you know, we offer clients different sort of options to try and plan for the year, earlier debit orders, etc., premium holidays, all sorts of things. But the reality is there's a big drop off in numbers of covered people come February, sort of double debit time, which is scary.
Yeah. I'm fascinated, though, at how the insurance companies in South Africa manage to do as well as they do, because the market is small.
It is, very, very small. Yeah.
And how many people in South Africa are insured when it comes to household, vehicle, personal? Do you have any idea?
I don't mean to shoot from the hip a little bit.
I'm not going to hold you to this.
It's a small number of people. I think you know, in the medical scheme environments, and I speak from this because of our health insurance product, you're under the 20% mark. Quite comfortably under the 20% mark of people who are.
Wow.
Therefore, and the real scary thing comes in that if you earn a salary, you don't actually qualify for free government health. So there's a whole working population that isn't in the 20%. And if we use formal unemployment stats, I mean, we've then got sort of another 50-55% of people who just don't have access to sort of the private facilities. So you know, insurance, motor vehicle insurance, etc. I don't know that number really at all, so I'm not even gonna put a number to it. But again, a large portion of the vehicles on our roads are underinsured or not insured at all.
Jeez, no, that's scary, because that means you smash into someone, you're gonna end up carrying the can.
Yeah, you're most likely that if somebody crashes into you as an insured person, that the person who has actually had the accident with you isn't insured. It's more probable than being the other way around.
Man. All right, but let's talk about pet insurance, because this is something that we've been discussing all week. And Ben's got a cat called Meowsers who's just had health problems. You've got two dogs, right?
Yeah, correct.
All right. So you thought about animal insurance. This is quite a new thing.
I think I think it's becoming...
If you'd asked someone about pet insurance 20 years ago, they would have laughed at you.
Pretty much, I reckon. I think so, yeah. well, I would have, absolutely. But it's more top of mind now, I think. And I think the reality is people are becoming more sort of financially aware of how to protect their earnings and how to protect their wealth, and taking steps from the formal financial sort of markets to say, look, well, how do I hedge myself against major financial losses? It's also, you know, it's been aided by social media, etc. So these types of products are becoming more top of mind. It's easier to reach your potential target market in a way that makes sense to them. Pet insurance has been around for a while. Just hasn't been, I don't think, aggressively marketed in terms of, you know, this actually does exist, guys. Buy it.
Yeah.
Very traditional channels have been used in the past. So I think, you know, it was never a major focus of ours.
But it can get really expensive is the point. I mean, any of these things where people get a surprise.
Yeah.
Those are the things that you want to take out insurance for. You don't want to end up with someone suddenly coming to you saying, oh, you're going to have to give us 8,000 Rand for that.
Exactly.
That's 8 grand that you don't have.
Absolutely. And I listened into one of your shows the other day, and then there was the, you know, what price do you put on the life? And that's a horrible position to be in, and you never really want to be in that position. And that goes back to what all of our products aim to do. So we're trying to bring affordable insurance to people in a manner that suits their lifestyle. We use tech as a delivery mechanism for making it easy for somebody to access their insurable benefits. A lot of businesses use tech for the sake of it.
So you mean tech as in the front end stuff that people will interface with?
Yes.
Or do you mean the back end stuff when it comes to calculating the risk, calculating the plan, calculating the premium, all of that? Is it both?
Both. Both. I mean, I think from the consumer perspective, they don't see the back end. I mean, what they see is a slick front end that delivers what they want sort of pretty much real time. I mean, the basis of all our products really is we've always said, give the client access to it. And our thought process might, to a lot of people, sound upside down. So on our health and our pet product, we give the client an app where they can say, log in, load a claim. Real time.
On an app.
Within 60 seconds, and I say 60 seconds just, you know, as a buffer, it's generally faster than that. But within 60 seconds, we'll actually load funds onto a one card for a client so they can transact in the free market with cash. So really what we've done is we've kind of said, okay, well, our clients trust us enough to give us a debit order every month.
Right.
So let's return the favor and trust them enough to say, you're going to need this cash. We're going to upfront you the cash.
Mm-hmm.
Just send us proof of it afterwards.
That sounds terrific. Because often there's a huge amount of paperwork.
Absolutely. So it's literally sort of a click, click.
When you're making a claim, it's not because something good has happened.
Absolutely not.
So you're not in the mood to fill in forms.
Absolutely. So the easier we can make it, you know, the more accessible we can make it, the more we can sort of penetrate the uninsured market. And I think that's what we're trying to do.
All right. Well, we'll talk a little bit about these products. What kind of dogs do you have? What are these?
I have two beagles.
Beagles?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, they're the best dogs.
They're fantastic. Little terrorists. I love them to pieces.
Do they? Someone said to me once, because I saw there was a beagle hanging around in the street where I live. And they're such friendly, happy, lovely dogs. They were originally, bred for hunting, but howl, do they?
I think hunting rabbits. So they don't bark traditionally. They howl and they bay. I think.
Does that make a noise? Is that a pain?
I'd have to ask my neighbors. I mean, I'm quite fond of it, but the neighbors not so much. They are noisy. They're high energy dogs. I mean, I think they require a fair amount of attention and quite a lot of exercise. Without it, they can get quite destructive.
If you do things like pet insurance, is it important that you have people who care about animals that work with you guys?
Well, I think that's the core of what we try and get to, is that we're not really trying to make our clients a number, try and build sort of a family environment in our organization that everybody actually cares about our client and what we're insuring. So that's the overall thing. Does everybody love dogs in our business? No, a lot of people are still terrified of dogs in our business.
Sure.
So sometimes we bring dogs in for a visit and people stand on desks.
Yeah.
But you know, we're trying to get there, and I think it's a culture that builds over a period of time.
All right. So listen, we've got to start something fun here. And I mentioned this just the other day, but you know how people talk about some pets look like their owners or the owners look like their pets.
Sure.
So we're going to start a little competition here. We're going to put this to the test and find out who here at Cliff Central looks like their pets. So we've got a one planned pet parade we'll be doing on the show. We'll have me with my dog Carl. I don't think I look like him. He's much better looking than me. Ben and his cat Meowses. Casper and the Casper Radio Show. So you've got Casper, Shemaine, Gavin, and Rion. They'll all be joining in. Kelman on Cliff Central with his dog Chi Chi. And we'll put the CEO of One Plan, who we've just met this morning, Michael, on to test whether he looks like Daisy and Bean, his two dogs. And you could stand the chance of winning R1,000 or more by voting, just voting, for the best lookalike. You could also stand a chance of winning R1,000 by going to cliffcentral.com and voting today. I think we'll put them up later today. Entries will close on the 31st of January. T's and C's will apply. And don't forget, when your pets need to go to the vet, the last thing you need to worry about is money. So with One Plan Pet Insurance, you can claim for a vet visit before you even see the vet. Funds are loaded onto the One card, which you could use to pay your vet bill. Ensure the health of your pets from as little as R133 a month. Doesn't sound like a lot.
Not.
SMS Cliff to 31644, that's CLIFF, and One Plan will call you back. So that's SMS Cliff to 31644. Right now, they'll sort it out for you. They'll call you back, make sure you give your pet safe, quality health care in the event of illness or an accident, and get in touch with One Plan Pet today to find out about affordable, hassle-free pet insurance. Good to meet you, Michael.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you. Thanks for popping by this morning. I saw your office here at Buccleuch.
Yeah, that's where we are.
Very nice.
Yeah,
drove past the other day. Saw One Plan up in there. I thought, oh, okay, I know those guys.
Yeah,
cool.
That's us.
Awesome stuff. So we'll start the competition and hopefully have a lot of reasons to laugh at each other when we decide who looks the most like their pet. And we'll take those votes on cliffcentral.com starting this coming week. So stick around for that.
This is cliffcentral.com.